Ocean voyages, expeditions, river journeys. Viking is dedicated to bringing travelers closer to the destination, offering a small ship experience and a shore excursion in every port. Learn more at viking.com.
In the days and weeks since the slap heard round the world, and I officially renamed this TV show Demelza, Elizabeth is still hoping that Ross will turn up and prevent her from having to marry George, with whom she's hedging her bets.
When do you expect him?
Who?
My nephew is not always the most subtle of men, nor the most discreet.
I'm not sure I know what you mean.
Oh, don't be coy, Elizabeth. Let us not pretend we prefer our leggin under this roof to a pole dark.
Demelza attempts to cash in on Captain McNeil's obvious affections at a fancy society ball, but realizes her marriage to Ross means more to her than she expected.
I begin to realize something about myself. Call it weakness, if you will. But I cannot give myself to any man except my husband. I am bound to him.
And Ross, though his stock has plummeted throughout Cornwall, we still have a little goodwill left for Ross Poldark.
I came here with good news. I came here to tell you that Blewett can repay the money I lent him. We can reopen Grace.
I'm Barrett Brontes, and this is Mining Poldark, a podcast from Masterpiece. I'm happy to be joined again by my co-host, Robin Ellis, who played the original Ross Poldark in Masterpiece's 1970s adaptation of the Winston Graham novels. Hello, Robin. How are you?
Very good, Barrett. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. With all this Cornish drama, there's a lot to unpack. Let's give a quick recap so we're all on the same page.
What Barrett and I have come to call the scene and its aftermath burns through this episode. It's Demelza's turn to don the boxing gloves, and it's a one-sided contest. Ross is walking round in a daze as she lands blow after stinging blow, but he still doesn't seem to get it. Perhaps I might have hoped for some understanding.
As Ross plans an everything-must-go fire sale of mining equipment, Demelza, done with being a housemaid-slash-wife, goes on strike from running Nampara, which quickly deteriorates into a pig pen of rotten vegetables and inedible food.
George is knocked off his self-proclaimed winner's podium by Elizabeth, understandably asking for a postponement of the wedding. He negotiates a month's delay as she wills Ross to ride to her rescue through the gates of Trenwith. Ross is bidden by letter to meet the great bearded Tonkin, ex-partner in the Carnmore Smelting Company in Truro, and it's good news. Demelza wrongly assumes the letter's from Elizabeth and realizes she's free to accept Hugh Bredragon's party invitation. He's delighted. What a sight for sore eyes. Installs her in the red bedroom, where, in spite of a gulp of Dutch courage, she soon regrets the assignation her anger has led her to agree to. Amorous Scots captain, do call me Malcolm. McNeil quickly demonstrates he's a fully paid-up member of the monstrous regiment of men.
She has to escape Bedruggins through a window, and the next morning Ross finds her wandering the beach to share his really good news that is now entirely meaningless because he basically torched the shared project of their life together.
When Ross fails yet again to turn up at the gates, Elizabeth tells Aunt Agatha, "He leaves me with no choice." She marries George, who rubs salt into Ross's rune by choosing to become master of Trenwith, a Poldark house.
Meanwhile, the last of the remaining Poldarks, Aunt Agatha, Geoffrey Charles, and Verity, can only find comfort imagining the past and how things might have turned out so differently. That was so good. The monstrous regiment of men. I think that the only one who is not a member of that is Dwight.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
He's Cornwall's only good man.
Although he did have a moment earlier in the series, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. We've forgotten about that.
Yeah, we've forgotten that. It's a long time ago.
Now we can get into the grit of the episode. So I'll start off our discussion with my first choice of a scene. Demelza has decided that she's done with being the housemaid slash wife. She's a lady now, so she's having her breakfast in bed like a real lady. And Ross comes in, and Demelza just sort of has a very superficial attempt to be lighthearted about everything and dismissive of him. But pretty soon, she just is taunting him.
Demelza, I never claimed to be perfect.
Have I ever asked for that? Not as I recall, but perhaps my memory serves me ill, for I seem to remember we promised to forsake all others.
I realize that I betrayed your trust.
Forfeit.
And that your pride is wounded.
Pride? My pride. To think I did always look up to you. Respect you. Revere you as my master long before you were my husband.
I see that, but...
For it did seem to me, unschooled as I was, you were not like other men. You had a kind of nobility. Not of birth, but of character. And I was so proud to think that such a man had married me. So now to discover that you are so much less than other men, are fallen so low because so far. It is not my pride that is wounded, Ross. It is my pride in you.
Whoa, that is so powerful. And that she was able to articulate that was amazing. And that's the moment that he should understand, you know? And by the end of the episode, he still doesn't understand. But she makes it perfectly clear, like, he has fallen. You ever have that moment, you know, where your mother said, I'm not mad, I'm disappointed. And that's what it is. He's not the man that she thought he was and that he thinks he is. So to me, that scene was a really great one and does so much to explain their relationship and what was so special about it and how damaged, how truly damaged it is.
Yes, the killing understatement from Mabu.
Yeah.
I totally agree. There is a good, wonderful moment at the end of her when she says, it's not my pride, it's my pride in you. Ross has a very thoughtful moment and he looks down and you think, he's got it. He understands. And then he comes through into the breakfast scene, and it's clear he hasn't understood at all.
Not at all, right.
It makes the second scene quite stunning in its effect somehow of his not understanding, not really getting it, because he really looks as though he'd swallowed her magnificent speech. As you say, it's really impressive and articulate and moving because of that, and genuine and heartfelt and stunning, really. And disappointing in his reaction, really, yeah.
On to the next choice, which is one of your moments. I'm anxious to hear.
I decided for my first scene on the breakfast scene, which is the second scene in the episode between the two of them. And I just think it's a wonderful scene of contained anger until the very end. And she manages to be extraordinarily articulate and has a real back and forth with him. And he is being extraordinarily patronizing and not really understanding at all the effect what he has done is having on her. And she's bubbling with anger. She contains herself, as I said, but at the end there's a tremendous explosion and it's very effective. So what happens is that she is playing with Jeremy. And he comes in and says the line, we can't go on like this, which is pretty amazing considering what's happened.
Deposa, I would never deliberately hurt you. You of all people must know that.
Must I, Ross? So I'm to assume that you inflict pain by accident without a second thought?
In the moment I admitted there was no thought of you. Or of the pain I might have caused, it was as if I was possessed.
Of course, no fault of yours, just a greater power in you and her, helpless to resist.
In a way, yes. Perhaps I might have hoped for some understanding, knowing you as I do.
Knowing me to be kind and simple and giving? Would you like me to throw myself off Hendrona Cliff so that you might bury me at your own convenience and wed again at your leisure?
I don't blame you for your anger, but how does it serve us now?
Serve us? How did you serve us? How does this serve us?
And that actually is where she cracks, and she sweeps the whole breakfast table clear of crockery and everything, and it smashes on the floor.
Oh, and it's so gratifying, isn't it?
It is. It's what we need.
Absolutely. When you're talking about that passage, when she says, knowing me to be kind and simple and giving, that was the thing. I think that's where it hurts. It hurts so much because his presumption, again, that she's just simple. It reminds me of that, well, Elizabeth is kind of a lady and she can't handle poverty, but Demelza can, you know, just,
yes.
Oh, it's brutal.
It points out how vulnerable she is, in fact. This brings out her vulnerability because of the social situation in the country at the time, you know, she's done fantastically well because of her character and her personality. But this really kind of cuts right down to the bone of her insecurity, and it's cruel and it's hard to hear. But we do get our moment at the end.
I love your choice of that scene.
One was tempted to sort of just stick with Ross and Demelza all the way through because of this thread that goes on. But there is a couple of other scenes. George and Elizabeth, when Elizabeth sends George a letter pleading for a delay in the wedding date, and she's watching the gates of Trenwith, hoping that Ross will ride through them and, you know, save her, basically. And who does she spy riding through them but George? And it's the wrong horseman. And he comes, of course, because he's very anxious at reading the letter. He's very civilized in his approach to her.
I want to be indulgent, both before and after our wedding. It's a bitter disappointment to me, but I will try to agree to your wishes if you will promise me one thing.
Yes.
That you name another date today.
Oh, no, I cannot.
Come, my dear, let us compromise so that both of us may get something from the arrangement. Grant me the consolation of being able to fix a date a month from today.
So soon?
But what is there to wait for? What do you imagine will happen in the meantime?
I do not know.
Can I rely on you, Elizabeth?
Very well. A month from today.
It's a nice scene of George. Well, we see him negotiating, basically. It's very interesting. She's on the back foot, but she doesn't do too badly either. And the engagement stays in place. I thought it was an engaging scene of two interesting characters.
It is a very good one because we need to be very clear how Elizabeth comes to her decision to marry George and her path toward a changed feeling about Ross. This is all important stuff. She's still hoping to be rescued, you know, and she still loves Ross, I think.
Yeah, she does.
She also wants to get out of this situation. She wants to get out of this situation with George. I feel like Elizabeth increasingly, between looking out the window at the empty gate and working on her embroidery, never mind her very, very ill mother. I think that the biggest prison for Elizabeth is the window with the empty gate, Aunt Agatha playing cards, and that embroidery she's been working on all episode. That's her future unless she gets out of it.
Yes, and significantly, she throws the embroidery away at one point, doesn't she?
Yes, yes, she does. Let's take a quick break before our next scene to hear a word from our sponsors.
Coming up next on Masterpiece on PBS, Mr. Bates versus the Post Office continues Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, followed by the finale of Alice and Jack at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central.
So on to your next choice.
My next is Demelza and Malcolm.
Right, don't call him McNeil. We're on first name terms now, right?
Yes. Which is a fascinating scene. And I'm reminded that when we did it back in 75, it was played more for comedy, quite a lot of it, until the end when it got serious. But it's interesting that over 40 years, things have changed. And you can't really play this kind of, well, I mean, you can, but they decided that it was too delicate, in a sense, to play this rather threatening scene, as it were, for laughs, because there is potential for that.
I actually felt they achieved some kind of very strange balance, because even though it was threatening and scary, I still felt like I was laughing at him a little bit throughout it. So it was still funny, even though it was scary.
It was still funny until it got not funny, and you realized that he really was a threat. And she realized that at the same moment. And one has to say that she, you know, in the garden beforehand and at the ball, she'd allowed him to kiss her. I mean, not in a very convincing way, but I mean, she hadn't exactly led him on, but she hadn't slapped his face or anything. And she gave him the name of the room that she was in, interestingly called the Red Room. So it's no surprise to her that he turns up and he slips in, and she's got a problem on her hands. She realizes and realizes very quickly that what she's been sort of trying to do in her mind is to get her own back on Ross, and she's decided on this strategy, and it just isn't working because she cannot do it. It's not in her character to do it.
Are you kind?
Immensely.
Then I beg you to bear with me, to understand why I led you to believe. It is on account of my husband.
Don't think of him.
He's betrayed me with another.
Is he insane?
And because of that, I thought that I should do the same.
Most assuredly.
Please, please, just hear me out.
Have I told you how beautiful you are?
I begin to realize something about myself. Call it weakness, if you will. But I cannot give myself to any man except my husband. I am bound to him. I wish it were not the case.
My angel. It does you credit to be so delicate. But think for a moment of me, who's been looking forward to this encounter as to a mortal's taste of heaven. Your duty now is not to your husband, but to me.
Malcolm, please. Malcolm, stop. Stop, Malcolm. Stop.
I like a woman who knows her own mind. I thought you were such a one. My mistake.
And she just collapses, and you know, it all the real grief comes.
Ross, I hate you. I hate you.
She's so vulnerable here in this scene. She's not just physically vulnerable. I mean, she says the thing. She says, "I'm bound to him," and it just hurts so much because she is, and that she had gone to this confusing, humiliating situation to try to be someone else, to be someone who's hard, like Margaret, and who doesn't care. And she couldn't. She's authentic and vulnerable. And I think that's why it's so sad.
Yes.
When she's sobbing later.
She's vulnerable, but she sees Margaret off, actually, in rather an effective way. You have to take care if you start a little verbal attack on her. She gives as good as she gets on a number of occasions. And certainly in this occasion, Margaret does not win the exchange.
She will also do that in support of, you know, someone she loves, like Verity.
Yes, yes, she will.
Don't cross her. She'll give it back much worse than she got.
I was just thinking that she says, "I hate you, Ross. I hate you, Ross." And what is the other side of that coin? It's, I love you, basically. It's a sign that she really very much in love with him, which is a hope for the future, of course.
So my next scene picks up after she's made her escape through the window. The next morning, we see her walking on the beach, and poor Demelza, just to digress for a moment, Demelza finally gets a beautiful gown, right? Finally, she gets this gorgeous crimson gown, and she ends up wearing it through the surf. That's so sad.
It is, yes.
She should have worn that gown and ended in triumph. But no, it's her morning after dress. And it's never a good sign for a woman who's heartbroken and wearing the same outfit that she went out the night before in. And who among us hasn't been there with the mascara trailing down the face? despondent, heartbroken.
I don't think I have, actually. But...
No, you have. No.
Well, not the mascara, anyway. I may have been heartbroken, but I'm not sure I was wearing mascara that night. But
well, then you weren't working it to full effect.
Okay.
Maybe you needed some for some makeup on stage, and then you didn't perform to your hopes, and maybe, I don't know. But...
Ah, well, that's true. That's probably true several times in my career. Yes. Back in the dressing room. That's true.
Poor thing. She's a mess, but she's more Demelza now than she was the night before. That ridiculous hairdo and the face powder and everything. It's just gone.
It's an odd look, isn't it? It doesn't feel comfortable somehow.
So there's a sort of a nakedness to her that's just more vulnerable than ever. And
yeah.
So the scene that ensues is kind of more of the same as the first and second one you and I talked about, because Ross is being just so stupid and she is trying to clarify it and nothing goes further. But those two being together on the beach, which is the site of so many important moments for them, the fact that this scene took place there and how dramatic it was with her in her red dress that's sort of trailing in the crashing surf behind her, and that, you know, it begins with her footprints. I think that just that scene is a state of mind, and it's so powerful that it stayed with me over all the ensuing years.
Demelza!
Ross, kind of you to come and meet me. Did you have a pleasant time at Trenwith?
I told you I went to Truro to meet Richard Tonkin.
Whatever you say, Ross. Do what you will. Go and live with her if you wish.
It's quite possible her marriage will still go ahead.
No doubt you did your best to prevent it.
No doubt I did.
So does she love George, then?
No, she does not. Demelza, I cannot blame you for your anger. But if you could bide a while, have a little patience.
Patience?
This thing will play itself out, sooner or later.
I see. So you just expect me to sit and twiddle my thumbs until you decide whether or not you want me?
It's not a question of wanting you. It's a question of not wanting her.
Do you not want her?
No. I don't know. Sometimes...
I'm not content to be second best.
Have I asked you to be?
Have you not made me so?
Why am I here? Demelza, why do you suppose I'm still here?
I don't know why you're still here, Ross. Because Elizabeth can't make up her mind?
No.
Because Elizabeth does not want you. Because she knows George is the better bet.
I came here with good news. I came here to tell you that Blewett can repay the money I lent him. We can reopen Grace.
He does see her from the cliff, and he sees her walking through the surf, and he might have thought in this heavy dress that she was about to walk out into the ocean. I mean, I think that's thinking too much of him, probably, but the image could be of a woman distraught on the beach in the surf with a heavy dress on. You know, it could be disastrous.
And that's not a Demelza move. I mean...
No, it isn't. You're quite right.
She is nothing if not a survivor.
It's true. It's true.
He may have thought that, though.
He might have done.
Which just goes to show that he isn't worthy of her.
That's true. He did rush down. I think he was concerned, at least. Yeah. I mean, you know, at least he was concerned. We'll give him that. They're wonderful scenes, these, yes. Lovely. I'm glad to talk about it.
They're so good. I just want to call out a scene really quickly where it's Elizabeth's sort of final conversation with Aunt Agatha, where they're finally honest with each other.
You must take the decision alone.
Aunt?
You cannot wait for him to help you.
I don't understand. How can he treat me so? How can he leave things so up in the air?
And not for the first time.
Exactly. Once before, I waited for him to come and see me. And when he did not...
You married Francis. And now?
I do not know. He's deserted me. He tried to stop this marriage, but offered nothing in return. He has taken what was not rightly his and walked away from the consequences. Why did he have to come? I hate him for it. He's left me with only one possible choice.
And then cut to the wedding. It's amazing.
So good, yes.
She does a great job in this episode. And, you know, especially because so much of the time, she just has to sort of stand there gazing out the window or show her anxiety through being silent and still. This is a wonderful transformation.
She's angry this time and her anger comes through. Her thought must have been, this is going to happen from Ross's behavior. This is going to happen.
Yep.
And he doesn't turn up again. You're right.
Yeah. So it should have been the episode in which Ross's numbers started going up again. But I'm giving him a zero, Robin.
Absolutely no question.
Right.
I mean, he made it easy for us.
I know. In fact, one might argue that he's in the negatives now.
Well, that would be fun.
That would be fun. He has a long way to go up. And he only has one episode left in this season.
Oh, wow. So I'll put him at minus 1% then.
Okay, minus one.
Minus one.
And let's see if he can eke out an actual apology. Then he might get up into the positive numbers again.
We'll see. But it's a hard one, isn't it, for him? Yeah, boy.
It is.
I can't wait.
No. I can't wait either. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Barrett. It's been a pleasure. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Elizabeth Poldark continues to make some baffling choices, but actor Hayter Reed has no regrets about her character's journey on the series. She explains where Elizabeth's motivations come from in a conversation with my colleague, Jace Lacob, on our companion podcast, Masterpiece Studio.
How do you see Elizabeth's journey as a character over the last two seasons? And how has she changed since the first time we meet her as Francis's fiance at the start of the series?
She's a completely different person at that point. You know, everything that she set out to have and be has kind of come falling down on her. Francis did not end up being the husband she thought he was going to be. And then obviously she ends up a widow. I think at the beginning of the second series, she realizes that she kind of needs to take matters into her own hands and do things herself in order to get anything done. So she becomes a little bit more go-getting, but also manipulative. And she realizes that, you know, her feelings for Ross are still there. And it seems like she just can't help it. She can't help it. And she that's, I think, where her manipulative side kicks in. She just needs to know that like a piece of his heart is still hers, however selfish that may be. So she becomes a little bit more selfish, actually. A lot more selfish.
She does.
Yeah.
But also it's about survival, I think, for
it
her.
It is about survival. Obviously, that night of passion isn't. That's that's like pent-up frustration, like over a decade, basically. Something that they almost had to get out of their system in order to move on. But it kind of like leaves, obviously, a lot of complications.
Now, Ross and Elizabeth do finally give in to their long simmering passion, and he breaks down the door at Trenwith to demand that Elizabeth not marry George. It's a very violent moment that turns passionate. What was your take on the scene when you read it in the script?
It was such a sensitive approach. Everyone was so wary of the sort of very, very fine balance between violence and passion and love and sex. And it needed to sort of come across that it wasn't driven by violence, but there was a lot of anger, you know, that initiated it, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I'd been told about it, and I read the chapter of when it happens in the book, and he doesn't really go into much detail, so there's a lot that you can interpret from it. So I didn't know what to expect, but I think Debbie did a really good job with sort of balancing it out, and filming it was great, and we had a great time doing it. But it was a very sensitive scene, and we took all day. I think we took all day, and then the next morning to do just that scene.
Yeah, I think, you know, given the violence that precedes their consummation and Elizabeth's reluctance initially, you know, it could be viewed as problematic, but I think it walks that very thin line.
But I mean, I think it's okay that it's viewed as problematic because it's not like, you know, they're walking a fine line of morality, you know, in that moment. They're both, you know, sort of dancing with the devil a little bit right there. But she resists because, you know, she is a lady and, you know, and she doesn't want to ever, Elizabeth is kind of, I used to say about her, she's kind of cursed with doing the right thing all the time. That's, she sort of throws that out of the window eventually, but she still, that is in her like code. So that's why she resists. And then she just gives, it's almost, she just goes, oh, what the hell, you know, this is what I want. So she starts to kind of, give herself a little bit more what she wants, which makes her, you know, very fun for me to play.
So does this tryst change Elizabeth's intentions to marry George?
It definitely puts a little halt to it. And she's hoping that Ross will make some sort of a decision. I don't think that she ever thinks that he will leave her, but, you know, it's like if you buy a ticket for the lottery and you're like, I'm probably not going to win, but maybe there's just a tiny little chance that I'll be a millionaire. I think that's where she's at. And she's kind of like, if there is that 1%, then I have to wait and see if that happens. So she postpones and she sort of, and George is being very frustrated by it. And she's just kind of like dancing around waiting for Ross to make a decision, which is very frustrating for her.
That was Poldark star Hayda Reid in conversation with Masterpiece Studio host Jace Lacob. You can hear more of her interview and other interviews with the Poldark cast on our Masterpiece Studio podcast, available at pbs.org/masterpiece studio or on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Radio Public, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Coming up next, a riot at Trenwith.
Be advised, we have firearms and won't hesitate to use them.
Come on, then, come on!
Take aim.
We'll survey the damage next time on Mining Poldark. And you can join us in our rewatching adventure here on Mining Poldark by watching the entire series on PBS Passport, a new member benefit from your local PBS station. You can watch select Masterpiece titles like Poldark, Downton Abbey, or Victoria as part of the Passport experience. To learn more, visit pbs.org/getpassport. You can also follow along with us on the PBS Masterpiece Prime video channel, available as an add-on service to your Amazon Prime membership. Mining Poldark is hosted by me, Barrett Brontes, with co-host Robin Ellis. We're produced by Nick Anderson, with help from Robin Bissett. Meredith Wheeler is our field producer. Tina Toby Mack is our sound designer. Suzanne Simpson is our executive producer. The executive producer of Masterpiece is Rebecca Eaton. Sponsors for Masterpiece on PBS are Viking, Raymond James, and the Masterpiece Trust. Poldark is a Mammoth Screen production for BBC, co-produced with Masterpiece.